Hello. Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to give you a heads up on a few notes. First, you might think, Camille, this is a rerun, a reissue. We've heard this episode before, and you would be wrong, but you would also be right. See, when Vincent Parrish first joined us for the episode, The Mothman Cometh, he not told us only the story of the Mothman prophecies, but he also told us two additional stories which have never been heard before until now. So what you're getting in today's episode is one of those other stories. So some of the episode will be familiar, but there's also a whole new story in there. So be sure to listen from start to finish to get the whole effect. How awesome is that? Also, to our Patreon patrons, you will be getting the third story as an exclusive. Also to our patrons, I did have you all vote for the next episode that was supposed to be this week's episode, but life happens. So you will get the episode that you voted on to be the subject of our next episode, as promised. There was a three-way tie, so Sydney will be making the deal-breaking decision on which story you hear next, but you should look out for that. And then we'll just go ahead and cover the other stories after that. How about that? How does that sound? Sound good? Awesome. So, without further ado, let's get on with this week's show. Thank you for listening.
Boost contains adult themes and language. Listener beware. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Boozed, where we get supernatural and shit-faced. Today, I have with me a wonderful guest, someone whose name you probably should be familiar with, because they are the composer to our theme song, that wonderful bit of musicality that precedes the talky-talk. I meant to ask this before. Do you prefer Vince or Vincent?
Either one. Yeah. I should probably start doing Vincent.
Vincent Parrish.
Or like do a professional thing, right?
Yeah. Well, Vincent Parrish is in the house. Hello.
All right. Hey, cheers.
Cheers.
If you ever meet me, call me Vince. It's totally cool. But okay. I'm going to, on paper, I have to do Vincent, I guess.
I'll call you whatever you want within reason.
Funny story. If I ever get somebody on the phone and they're saying, and I say, hey, it's Vince with blah, blah, blah. How's it going? Or, hey, this is Vince. They say, hey, Ben, how are you? There's an extremity I've gotten, which was here's the worst one I've gotten. I ordered delivery once. It arrived. They had written my name, and it was D. It was Delta is the first. So D-I-N-Z-E. Dense.
Dense Parrish.
Dense. Sure. I hope I'm dense in a good way.
I didn't want to make that joke, but since you opened it up. Thank you.
I know, I'm pretty dense.
Vince Ben Dents. Tell the people a little bit about yourself. Who's a what's a Vincent?
I would say, what do? I do audio. I do audio design. That's kind of something I'm really, I've been doing for probably 15 years. I do music. That's probably the first thing I started. I'm sorry. Let's reiterate. I started with music for 15 years or so. I had done composition for a long time. Probably in 2003, a friend of mine showed me a digital audio workstation, which is this pretty cool piece of software that can allow you to do pretty much anything with audio. And it's very user-friendly when it comes to music. And so I picked up on that for a long time. I wrote music just for fun, kind of taught myself. And
whoopsie.
Over the years, I have written a lot of music, and now I am slowly angling towards audio design in the gaming development, gaming community. something I'd like to really break into is creating the atmosphere for a visual entertainment experience that is interactive. Yeah, that's a lot of big old words right there. But an interactive experience that is visual. That's something I want to, I think that audio is the largest aspect of immersion, in my opinion. At least in this, the games I played, the movies I've watched, the things, a lot of times audio was the biggest convincing agent, if you will, that kept me, or that drew me in. Whew. Excuse me. Audio is the biggest thing that I think can pull something out of your soul. I think a visual I would say visual is 50-50. It's easily it's half. But I think that a huge portion of that is what your ears get out of the mix. So
spoken like a true composer, musician.
That's what I hope to do one day, you know, as a profession. So
awesome.
It's been a hobby. I've been very fortunate to have a lot of work, so here I am. And you, of course, have used a little bit of my work. I'm very, very thankful for that.
Well, thank you for allowing us to use it.
Of course.
Yeah, very generous of you for free.
Was that free? That was.
I feel like it'll be free until you see how much our Patreon starts making, and then you'll be like, listen.
No, that is yours to keep.
Maybe I need to drop another contract for you to sign today.
Forever.
in perpetuity. So what are you drinking today? What's in your cup?
I brought some Blood and Honeys. Revolver.
Revolver. Local, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm embarrassed.
Granbury, Texas, I see.
I should know. Look at you.
On the back, because I was reading the bottle.
I should know. I should know that. But hey, it's pretty damn good stuff.
Good.
Gets the job done.
I myself am drinking a Strongbow Gold Apple, which... are you familiar with Strongbow at all?
Yes.
Okay.
In name alone.
Gotcha. I didn't drink for a very long time. And then when I started drinking, it was also around this time I started dating an Irish man. And I mean that literally. He was from Ireland. And he told me that Strongbow is what they drank when they didn't have enough money for Guinness. Because the alcohol content volume was pretty damn good. So you could get really messed up really quick on like, a 4-pack, which is how they used to sell it. They used to sell like tall boy cans, 4-packs is how I used to buy Strongbow. And I used to get fucked up on Strongbow. This is not the same though. The what I bought today is not the same, unfortunately. So it's a little blech. But anyway, that's what I'm drinking. A good classic. This one only has like 5% alcohol.
Well,
I think the original ones had like closer to 10, 8 maybe.
I don't know what these have. I think it's 7. Yeah, it is 7.
Actually. Oh, this is really weak then in comparison. Damn.
Well, there's a couple more in there.
I don't like beer though.
That's all right. I'm not insulted.
That's
until
good.
I leave and then I'll be insulted.
Please.
It's okay.
Save your outrage until you have left my home.
I was never a beer person. I think eventually I had an IPA. That actually blew my mind. And there's the thing. This is the weird fucking thing with beers. And am I allowed to cuss? I can cuss.
You can curse, yes.
So it's the weird thing, fucking thing, with beers. I hated IPAs. I hated every one I ever tried. I had one that was New Mexico brand or I forget what the hell the brand was. It's a yellow can. It's got anybody from New Mexico. It's got, I think, the flag on it. For the life of me, I can't remember what it is. But it was
Arizona tea, Brent.
No, sorry.
That's Arizona, not New Mexico. That was a dumb joke.
Arizona,
I'm sorry.
Somehow Arizona worked. In my
It's all the same, right?
Yeah, whatever. Same little quadrant of America. That might be insulting to some.
I'm sure.
Well, good. Everybody has to be offended at some point, right?
Absolutely.
You can only give you can only take offense. You can't give it. Is that the?
I have no idea.
Yeah, we're gonna move past. So this beer, I had it once. I hated IPAs. I had this IPA. And then the next day, I just liked IPAs. I don't know. Every IPA I've ever had since then has been at least drinkable.
Really?
And it's kind of become the one I like. Obviously, Red or Revolver Blood Honey is not an IPA, but...
Easy there.
Excuse me. It's a Revolver.
No, I made a mistake by drinking something with any kind of carbonation because I'm also doing the same thing.
I've got some spooky things to talk about.
All right.
They do have a personal tie, in a way, only in that when I was a kid, I was kind of an idiot, and I elected to scare the shit out of myself a lot for some reason. Because I was bored, it was late at night, the internet existed, it was in its infancy. And Google was probably just around, YouTube maybe not quite yet. And a lot of the stories I think I'm going to tell you, let's see. I think all of these stories I learned about ultimately before YouTube, which was around 2005. Infancy of the internet, it was pretty freaking scary. Being a 12-year-old or 10-year-old and late at night, you know, going online and searching things up, looking up what I'm about to tell you. There's this idea that I think everybody, it's universal. Between 3 and 4 a.m. or between 2 and 4 a.m. is the scariest time in the universe to ever look into any of this shit. But that's when you're going to do it. That's when you're going to do it. Because
witching hours.
Yeah, exactly.
What's our topic? What are we getting into today?
I've got three tales.
All right.
I'm going to talk about. Each tale is sort of an urban legend. And each of these sort of urban legends scared the shit out of me when I was a child. I was in the infancy of the internet around, had to have been 2003, around that time. That's when I really had a good computer. What was I doing in 2003? I was in 8th grade or 9th grade or 10th grade. And at night, I'd get home. I think I got a laptop after maybe in, you know what? What the hell am I talking about?
Laptops.
I had a laptop in college.
Holy yeah, God. I was like, when did you were fancy if you had a laptop in 9th grade.
It had to have been a couple of years later then, because it was when I had my laptop that I was late at night, searching all of these different things. I guess Google probably existed. So this was probably 2005, 6, 7. But somehow I happened upon these different stories that I'm going to tell you tonight. And they scared me a lot because I was a kid and I shouldn't have been doing that. I should have, you know, I should have been playing
should have been
games
like me playing Sims until 4 a.m.
Oh, I did
all
that
night.
Shit. Sims was so good, man. Man, are they making a new Sims soon? Seriously.
Rosebud for all those who
Rosebud, the cheat.
Who are in it. Yeah. You know, what is it? The one? Semicolon.
You build a room without a door.
You
put your Sim in there and you burn the house down.
Stop it. I was trying to be an astronaut, I wasn't killing my people. Come on.
Yeah, well.
But anyway.
You still killed him. Out of accidents.
Oh, good times.
All right. So I've got three stories. Three stories I'm going to dish. The first one revolves around the Philadelphia Experiment. So the Philadelphia Experiment was an interesting story about this naval warship. Specifically, it had a class. Hang on. It had a class, the warship had a class, hang on, it was a destroyer escort. So there originally were destroyers that weren't quite as nimble as this son of a gun. This thing was a destroyer escort called the USS Eldridge. And in 1943, supposedly some pretty crazy experiments were done with it. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about. In 1943 in Philadelphia, of all places, what the title of this is called, the Philadelphia Experiment. Are you ready to hear about the Philadelphia Experiment?
I am. Lay it on me.
Excellent, excellent. Are you ready?
We are ready.
Are you ready for some weird shit involving teleportation?
Ooh.
Do you know of a person named Einstein?
Sounds familiar, but I'm not. He was like a chef, right? Like
he was a pretty smart guy.
Pretty good omelet.
I imagine he made a pretty decent omelet involving gravity, involving mass.
That whole atom bomb omelet thing, maybe?
Manhattan omelet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They call it the Manhattan omelet. Oh, God.
Supposedly. Okay. I have to preface all of this that I'm about to tell you on Boo's podcast, the three stories, is purely conjecture. However, there is at least some credibility in some of these stories. There is some... you know, this shit feels like it could have happened. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, the government experimenting on soldiers is not out of the realm of reality.
I wouldn't even say it's out of the realm of reality today.
No, never.
I've been experimenting on plenty, and it was fun.
It was fine. It's fine. This extra arm, it comes in real handy.
Well, don't, you know, I didn't want to talk about that.
I'm sorry.
You've ruined it.
I'll cut that.
Okay. We're going to start with a gentleman named Morris K. Jessup. Morris K. Jessup was an astronomer. This gentleman was somebody who had gone to school for astronomy. He got his master's in astronomy. Pretty legitimate dude. Became an author. Wrote a lot of books. In 1955, he published a book called The Case for the UFO. Yep, we're going to talk about aliens here a little bit. We're not going to talk too much about aliens. But we're going to talk about the case of the UFO. I say UFO. That's going to be probably the most of it.
Okay.
We're not getting too much into aliens. There's a teensy bit of aliens here. So,
just a preface. Alien light.
That's it. Alien light, mm-hmm. even.
Less sugar.
So, in 1955, this is 12 years after the occurrence of the Philadelphia experiment, or experiments, plural. Philip K. Jessup, this gentleman has his master's in astronomy. He's an author. He's written some books. He writes a book called The Case for the UFO. I may have said that already. If I haven't, he's written a book called The Case for the UFO. Not even a month later, he gets some interesting letters in the mail. Two, specifically, from a gentleman who, quote-unquote, calls himself Carlos Allende. A-L-L-E-N-D-E. Allende. I've been told in Spanish, two L's is A-Y. So we're going to say Allende.
Very nice.
Pretty cool name. Apparently, this dude's real name was Carl Allen.
So oh.
I think there's a chance he was embellishing. However, so Morris Jessup receives some letters. And these letters are, you know, after his book comes out about the case for the UFO, talking about this warship called the USS Eldridge that apparently had been moored in the Philadelphia Naval Yard around 1943 in October timeframe. Supposedly, there were a lot of government experiments on this ship around that time. It was outfitted with a lot of electronic equipment, things that essentially were attempting to utilize Einstein's unified field theory, which it obviously isn't something that's proven. It wasn't proven then, isn't proven now, but it's an idea that sort of attempts to unify gravity, electromagnetism, things into a centralized, you know, idea that can then be plugged into equations and things like that. So, Carlos Allende alleged that this USS Eldridge, this gigantic warship that was outfitted with this equipment, was sitting in the Philadelphia Naval Yard. And this equipment that it was outfitted with were, you know, essentially, there isn't necessarily a lot of information about what the equipment was exactly, but the point of it all was to try and utilize some experiment that could render this ship invisible, that could bend light around the ship. And so this unified field theory of Einstein is tossed around a lot. But the overall point is that electromagnetism combined with gravity, something or another, I'm not a scientist, I'm a layman. I would say I'm even barely a layman. The light is supposed to bend around this ship, and it's not seen on radars, it's not seen by the enemy,
mm-hmm.
yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
Well, they throw the switch in October 1943, according to Carlos Allende, who sends a letter to Morris K. Jessup. They throw the switch, and the ship, the first instance, it vanishes. Green fog sort of encapsulates the entirety of the ship, and it disappears from sight. There's a few different accounts that can confirm this. Hopefully. There's a few accounts that can confirm this. It reappears very shortly after, and some things are weird immediately off the bat. When approached, when people go onto the ship, when, they gather the data. There were seamen, and I just wanted to say the word seamen. There were Navy individuals that were stationed on the ship and were unaware of the experiment. Mm-hmm. But these seamen were part of the experiment unknowingly. And so when the ship was rendered invisible or disappeared, vanished, so, you know, quote unquote, when it arrived, when it reappeared, arrived, when it reappeared, apparently not one of these people were the same afterward. Supposedly they were either driven to madness, they were, had a ton of physical ailments, nausea, extreme sickness, mental fortitude was gone. This is where I attached the story when I was a child, and this is what scared the living shit out of me, was that there are accounts that some of these Navy individuals or people had been embedded in the ship in a way, or sort of the ship disappeared, reappeared, and they had been sort of, pardon me, combined in, you know, become part of the ship.
Ugh.
One person had his hand stuck in a wall. One person was, you know, their whole leg, half of their body was stuck in a wall, just a upper torso sticking out.
It's like that scene.
Weird shit.
Legion, the show. Have you ever watched the show Legion?
A little bit. I don't think I've seen what you're referring to, but I have seen a little bit of the show.
I mean, if you've seen, it's pretty deep into the first season, I think, when this scene pops up. But yeah, there's something very similar happens. Trying to avoid spoilers, but something very similar comes up, and it is freaky as shit.
Some of the research I did, you know, quote unquote, looking and watching these videos, molecular, you know, deconstruction is kind of something that's tossed around, or and something that sparked my mind as a child was, I love this idea that, I don't know, you vanish, you come back, and everything's crazy. What the hell did you see? Mm. Where did you go? Morris K. Jessup was determined to find out. So he received a bunch of letters from Carlos Allende, who alleged all of this stuff had happened. Carlos Allende, ultimately, Morris K. Jessup kind of determined this person might be crazy. This person might be a crackpot. So ultimately, we just have, in this whole Philadelphia experiment, there's really just one account of things that have happened. But it's kind of crazy. Something that makes it a little crazier is that the Office of Naval Research, the ONR, received a package in the mail. And this package simply said Happy Easter on it. And so they opened the package, and it was a copy of Morris K. Jessup's book, The Case for the UFO. But this specific copy had, in all of the margins of the book, in every page, there were a lot of notes. There were annotations. There were different comments on what Morris K. Jessup had researched, and it appeared as though the Office of Naval Research had received a copy from some people claiming to be aliens, or some people claiming to be, you know, some kind of supernatural entity. These people refer to themselves as gypsies in the margins. They refer to themselves. There were three separate entities. There was Jimmy. So this person was J-E-M-I, Jimmy. And then there was Mr. A and Mr. B. And each of these people had sort of a correspondence in the margins of this entire novel throughout the end, from the beginning to the end, which Morris K. Jessup wrote this novel. And it's kind of, this is around the time that UFO stuff is kind of blowing up.
Yeah.
It's blowing up.
The hills.
Strictly, he's hypothesizing. He's thinking, what's possible? What is happening? What's going on? And so he's got some different ideas around what UFOs might be, what they are, what kind of technology could be powering them. And so these individuals that had submitted this novel to the Office of Naval Research, in the margins of his book, Jessup K. Morris, wrote a lot of ideas either supporting what his hypotheses were. They wrote a lot of ideas that... essentially, you get the idea that they were having a conversation between themselves within this book. It's weird.
Okay. Yeah.
You can buy this copy. It's called the Varo edition, V-A-R-O edition of The Case for the UFO by Jessup K. Morris.
Hmm.
And a weird thing that happened is the Office of Naval Research, the officers, the naval the people that were working on this project here, approached Morris about this. They also secretly paid or funded that 100 copies of this same edition, quote unquote, the Varo, V-A-R-O, Varo edition of this book were printed. So they wanted 100 copies printed. And this copy specifically had those three individuals in the margins that had crazy shit. I mean, it was crazy shit. It was English, but a weird thing is that a lot of the punctuation was off. They would capitalize things in ways.
So like someone who's like not native English learner.
Right, exactly. And so there's this idea that, sure, maybe it was these weird alien folks. Maybe it was also somebody, you know. Ultimately, I think Jessup Morris kind of came to the conclusion that the same person that had sent them these letters talking about the Philadelphia experiment, Carlos Allende, it looked like the same handwriting. And so I think he came to the point that this might be a little nuts. However, he wasn't done with it.
Sorry, that was my spooky sound.
How dare you?
Okay. I'll do better. It was more of No?
I mean, maybe. Let me, you're helping me because I'm just trying to get caught up where I am in this.
I'm filling silence, killing time here.
So, Carlos Allende, this dude tried to link it to aliens. That's the interesting thing, because you've got a naval experiment, you've got Einstein, you've got all this wibbly wobbly, timey wimey stuff, and this dude brings in aliens, and that's cool. You know what? We'll do it. But the reality of this thing is that there's some other parts of the story that are interesting. Apparently some of the semen, and I'm going to use that word again because I love it.
You love semen?
Oh, sure.
Sorry, I could not help myself.
That's right. In the context of the story, we'll say yeah. There was an account where at a bar very close by to the Philadelphia Naval Yard, excuse me. Is there more of this?
We can stop and get you another.
All right, let me do that real quick. I got to pee. All right.
Cool.
Yeah, pause it real quick. All right, so this fucking ship, right, vanishes or teleports. There's a bunch of different... Can I back up for a second?
Okay.
I am of the mindset, I'm not somebody that's, I'm not a big conspiracy person. I'm not somebody that's, hell, I'm not even believing all the words I'm saying tonight. However, when I was a kid and I read about this stuff, there is enough of something, you know what I mean? That there's some credence somewhere that gives you the uncomfortable. There might be something. That's what I'm trying to say. Maybe.
Right.
That's the best I can give you is a soft maybe.
Well, that's something kind of like I say about things that are language-based or religious-based. I tend to subscribe to. There's so many commonalities that there has to be something to it. Or it was all one thing at one point. And clearly with religion, most likely it was all one thing at one point.
Yeah.
And then split off into the mess we have now. But so like kind of like, yeah, that commonality, when there's so much commonality between two things, you kind of have to imagine there's some truth in there somewhere.
Could be, for sure. A part of me is like, there's this thing in me that's like, I refuse to believe that anything I'm about to tell you tonight is true. I'm going to be honest with you. But there is something there. There's this human element. There are things that if it were true, you know, if things were possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, man.
Well, it's like we can't definitively say it's not true.
It's true. Well, it's not true.
It's not true.
Okay.
Non-heinous.
So this fucking ship supposedly there's three separate instances where first time it disappears, it reappears immediately. It turns invisible, so to speak. Another time there is an account where it vanishes entirely. It doesn't just go invisible. It teleports up to Norfolk, Virginia, 200 miles away. And within a couple of hours, it comes back. It teleports back to the Philadelphia Naval Yard. And this is another instance where everybody is just completely, screwed up. You go on the ship after the experiment. Everybody's lost their mind. Everybody's nauseous. I think what happened, or what is quoted to have happened via Carlos Allende, is that all of these seamen that were expendable, essentially were expendable, and perished at sea, officially, or were lost in some kind of official Navy report.
Right.
Some kind of thing. But when you dig into this thing, there's some interesting stuff there. I like this idea. I like the idea, man. What happens when you teleport? What happens when you disappear?
Is it like the movie The Fly, where if it happens, you're like half human, half fly, if like it goes wrong?
A small percentage would be The Fly. I feel like I like the idea that like to summon a little bit the horror movie Event Horizon. The crew of this spaceship, there is a spaceship that's sort of abandoned out in the middle of space that had some crazy shit happen to it, where they had found some new ways to manipulate gravity and teleport and things like that. And what they ended up discovering when they teleported was hell, essentially. It was like this idea of purgatory or hell, purely hell. And that's sure. Yeah, it's not going to be the hell like Bible hell.
Right, right.
But I don't know, man. There's something behind this idea of this ship teleporting, it coming back, and all these people being stuck and embedded in it. That, like, man, when I was a kid, I don't know. It got the imagination going for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, that's kind of gross and ooky for sure.
But supposedly these things happened.
I mean, being embedded walls happens.
That's true.
It's just life.
Well, occasionally. You get frustrated with life and, you take a fist and...
Oh, no.
You embed it right in the wall.
Let's not support that kind of behavior.
No, for sure.
Let's get some therapy instead, maybe.
So all of this, the Philadelphia experiment, is completely contingent upon one person's account. This Carlos Allende, supposedly... Carlos Allende was a gentleman who actually goes by the name of Carl Allen, and he was referred to as kind of a nutcase by Jessup Morris, who ultimately sort of researched a lot of this Philadelphia experiment. I'm going to grab my notes real quick because I am losing my place. Let's see. It does reference aliens, man. It shouldn't. You can buy the edition of this book. You can buy this guy's book that has the interesting...
Yeah, that surprised me. I'm surprised they would publish that.
Yeah, the Office of Naval Research did it. I don't know what it was. I feel like somebody just said, hey, you know what? The hell with it. Let's see what happens. Let's get a lot of people to see this.
Or like, oh, we have to... debunk this, so let's make it so public that people can't think it's real.
You can buy it.
You know, like, if it were that big of a real deal, clearly the government would have it, like, redacted to shit.
Another interesting part is, why did they take an interest in that? Or why did, what the... So the official Office of Naval Research reached out to this writer or this astronomer who... had received these letters from Carlos Allende, who spoke of, these experiments happening, and they were doing their due diligence or whatever, quote unquote. Maybe, back then they were supposed to do that, but it's still kind of like, what the hell are you guys doing? I don't know. what eventually this ship, the USS Eldridge, was decommissioned. It became, I think, a French ship called the Léal, something like that. It was destroyed for scrap metal. I think in the late 90s, early 2000s, something like that. But supposedly, man, Einstein was involved, and he was totally cool. And he said, hey, guys, you guys have figured out what I was trying to figure out. Which, come on, they didn't. But supposedly, they had figured some crazy shit out and teleported this gigantic ship. I don't know. If you had teleportation technology, would you put it on this giant ship like that?
I mean, if I had teleportation and technology,
why a ship?
I wouldn't do a ship. I don't see what, even from like a military perspective, I think the only thing it would do would be maybe the element of surprise and saving money on fuel. You know, those are like the only two benefits I can see is like, oh, we're going to just teleport this straight into the other side of the enemy lines. Okay, so that does make sense, I guess. That's why I would. But if me personally, I would not sell that technology to the military because fuck them. And I would just teleport to like Bali or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
Yeah.
Is that an option?
I assume if you can teleport. I know.
We were only going straight to hell or something.
Well, that's what you told us says 200 miles, which clearly that means I'm only getting to like fucking south of Waco at this point. Sure. But, sure. Or like Oklahoma.
Well, you know who's there? I hear
Chip and Joanna.
Chip and Joanna. I hear. Can hook you
gangbusters
up.
Down
nice
there.
A nice little, one bedroom, maybe. Right in the upper layer of hell.
Lots of shiplap.
Oh, I know.
It's an entire shiplap room.
Their whole relationship has been kind of
shiplap.
What our story has described, right?
And over, yeah.
I don't profess to know, honestly.
I don't know a lot about them. What I know is pretty anecdotal. I've seen a couple of episodes of their show.
It's all right. It's fun.
Whenever. It's fun. Like, he seems like after a while he gets annoying. He seems like after,
the chipper.
Yeah, he just seems like one of those people who's always on.
I'm just tired after a while.
Yeah, and you're just like, okay, but can you turn off real quick?
Yeah.
Like, today
we're going to break this shit. And...
Yeah, but they've got millions, so they're doing something right. But they also have too many children.
How are we going to get our millions? I think you're doing good because this podcast is obviously undervalued because... You should already be making millions.
Thank you.
Personally, that's my
I'm just waiting to rake in the cash. I mean, I think...
When
it happens.
Can I be an investor?
Well, you're already an investor.
Oh, well, perfect.
You are a Patreon donor. So you've already invested.
Really? Shit, let me check on that.
don't check your bank account.
Okay. I will always support this podcast.
Well, thank you.
It is incredible. It's very fun.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
appreciate it. And all of you can also support patreon.com.
Right. Anybody listening right now, go ahead and go online to
patreon.com/boozedpod.
That's right.
That's
and
it.
When you get there, I don't want you to donate the minimum. If you're going to do it at the minimum, don't waste your time.
I mean,
I think the new minimum is $100,000
a month.
That's right.
And after 3 months of $100,000, you get a sticker.
This story, the Philadelphia experiment, was something that when I was a child, I don't know what the hell I was doing looking this up. B, I don't know how I stumbled upon it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
I think there was a History Channel. Okay, so there was the period of the History Channel where for 10 years they went through all the... They said, hey, guys, we've talked about history enough.
We've done all history.
Let's validate shit that's not real.
Aliens. Right, exactly. The meme was born.
Don't get me wrong. It scares... Oh, shit. It's terrifying, and it is definitely impacting, and it will get money, and it will garner... views. But yeah, that dude with the hair, the alien hair,
aliens,
that was the culmination of not disinformation but unintelligible. I'm sorry, I don't mean to.
I mean, he's a scientist.
I'm gonna
right?
criticize a little bit History Channel. However, They make the most terrifying goddamn documentaries. I'm telling you, especially from 2000 to 2006 or something like that, when this one was around. It was just, it was violent. It was like I was a kid watching this shit and watching people being stuck to the, I don't know, to the ship.
Interesting.
It had an impact.
It was like how TLC had to stop calling itself the Learning Channel.
Oh, God.
Because there's only so many episodes of John and Kate plus 8 you can get away with before it stops teaching you anything.
Do you have DVDs of that?
No.
Because
I sold them last week. Damn. You just met. Damn. This is why you got to be on Facebook. I had it on the Facebook Marketplace.
Well.
And they just sold.
Honestly, can I say I don't like Facebook. I don't think anybody likes Facebook anymore.
No one likes it.
There's a very small number.
Like your grandma likes it.
Like is not something that most people do with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe on Facebook you like shit, but those people are making mistakes.
Hey.
However,
follow us on Facebook.
Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ here's my
Boost Pod. Here.
What was I saying? Damn it.
I don't know.
Facebook.
Sorry.
Were we talking about Facebook?
We were talking about the Learning Channel and
the Learning Channel. You'll see.
And John and Kate plus 8.
John and Kate plus 8.
I have no idea where you were going with that.
Shit. That's all right. We can edit all of this out.
Okay.
Post. Sydney over here can easily edit this out or add sound effects. Let me drink some more.
Yeah, drink some more and see if it comes back to you. That's how that works, right? The more you drink, the more you remember.
The more you drink, the more you know.
Mm-hmm. I'll add the actual sound effects, but it sounds good.
There should be a G.I. Joe meme in here somewhere. G.I. Joe.
Well, you can't do memes in audio.
What meme could you do in audio?
Well, memes are pictures, so none. Maybe a...
Is it defined as a picture? I thought a meme could be anything. I thought it was the idea.
I'm pretty sure it's just a picture, though, right?
A meme?
A meme is a picture. And a GIF is a moving picture.
A GIF?
With no sound.
I've got you some GIFs for your birthday.
Thank you.
Very well.
Love it. So sweet. It's coming up.
All right. So back to the Philadelphia experiment. It was kind of spoopy, and that's kind of the gist of it. Like the funny thing about this whole story, Carlos Allende is the one person that really has all the information about the Philadelphia experiment.
So what has happened to him, though? Like, did anyone like arrest him, interrogate him,
put
him in a hospital?
Everything that I researched, he's a very hard person to get a hold of. He vanished.
Of course you would be.
He wrote in letters and nobody could ever get a hold of him outside of them.
I feel like he's like that Mel Gibson character in the movie Conspiracy Theory.
Oh, of course. He puts the bottle on the door handle upside down.
And then like if someone comes, he already has the escape hatch in his apartment.
That's right. But that was before the internet.
That's true.
Was that before the internet?
I think it's like early internet.
Early internet. 2001.
Because I feel like he was on a computer at some point. But anyway,
it was a conspiracy theory, if anything.
I just remember a very good Lauryn Hill song at the end of that movie. That's all you needed to know.
Can you sing it for me?
Ooh, no.
That sounded like it.
That was it.
That's good. It's accurate.
Thank you. I get told I sing like her constantly.
Jessup Mack is an interesting person. There's something interesting about what happens to him.
Mm.
Supposedly, he kills himself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Baby.
So he was researching the Philadelphia experiment. I think he had some rough times, quote unquote. He had a questionable suicide. His relative, I think his closest relative was like a sister or something like that. And I think the idea was that she maybe expected that he might have killed himself. And so it wasn't that out of the ordinary. But there are a lot, and by a lot I mean a few, people that speculate that perhaps his death was a little bit strange.
Mm.
After, you know, obviously researching all of the Philadelphia experiment, quote unquote, what happened to this weird ship. So anyway, that man is now dead. And I don't think there is too much more left on that story.
Well, all
but
right.
But what if, you know, I just like this idea of not, what the hell happened? If you're going to develop teleportation technology,
mm-hmm.
and then you test it, and those people come back, and it happens to occur, like, who came up, what the hell idea? Who decided that the people would be fused to the ship? Who came up with this idea?
That's a yeah, really yeah. Why idea. Wouldn't they just be lost or just all die or just
that should
something
be
a, less traumatic?
There should be another movie. I think there was a movie made 1984 called The Philadelphia Experiment that was based on this story very loosely. Not a very good Rotten Tomatoes score. but it's an interesting little urban legend.
Okay.
It's got some history. If you'd like to do a little bit more reading on it, definitely Google Morris K. Jessup or Carlos Allende or Carl Allen. It ties into aliens a little bit, which is, I kind of left a little bit of that out. Honestly, it needed to be left out. But I've got another story for you lined up.
Well, then.
The next one's a little spookier, honestly. The first one, was a little sci-fi. We're going teleportation technology. We're going potentially time travel.
Mm-hmm.
One little element I just remembered that I left out completely the whole fucking story was that when the ship teleported and supposedly returned to the Philadelphia Naval Yard, 10 minutes, it had traveled 10 minutes into the past. So the clocks on the ship had been 10 minutes before what they were. Interesting.
Hmm.
We'll see. Whatever. People time travel. People go through space. They move around.
It happens
and then
all the
they time. Weld to the ship and they're not humans anymore. And, you know, it's cool. I think if anybody would be proud, it would be easily H.P. Lovecraft would probably be pretty proud of that one.
Mm-hmm.
I've always liked his work. I think he's a profound racist piece of shit. In real life, apparently.
Oh, well, that makes me feel bad for
Which
owning one of his books.
It sucks. Don't look into it any further.
Okay, should I read the rest of the book, though?
Something interesting. He never has racism in his stories.
Well, that's nice.
But he's really racist.
Okay. I guess we could say that about a few people that we maybe don't know about,
that's
though.
True. It's probably a lot true, actually. However, that dude has this idea of horror that I think is the best thing that could exist for.
I mean, racism is horrific.
Outside
so there
of,
you go.
Outside of his stupid human existence, the stories that he told, and I'm not justifying Roman Polanski. Fuck that guy. And I'm not justifying H.P. Lovecraft. But the ideas of this sort of horror that's cosmic, this horror that's larger than life, larger than the planet, larger than the solar system. That's like the scariest shit to me. H.P. Lovecraft, I think, nails it in a way with these ideas of geometry that doesn't make sense. You know, physically, things that don't visually make any sense whatsoever. I like the idea that he has tying it into this Philadelphia experiment where they teleport and they see some shit that, you know.
Yeah.
What did they see?
Something
and
happened.
And then they lost their minds. I don't know. Just think about it. What happens?
You know, what does happen?
What happens? The Philadelphia Experiment. To summarize, interesting giant ship teleports. Who the hell knows?
Who knows?
You should do some further reading.
No way to know.
The listener.
No way to know. So let me ask you this before we kind of wrap up. What are some of the things that you believe in supernaturally? Like, do you have opinions about ghosts and vampires? Is it something that you typically ascribe to? Or do you kind of like, are you very a reasonable person who's like, or what do you believe it is all?
That's a very, very interesting question. And I will answer in that I could never profess to know what truly is going on beyond what my mind can contain or encapsulate. So I'm open. I'm open to things. I'm open to occurrences. I have not been convinced of anything paranormal, currently. I've had some interesting occurrences. I've had some friends tell me stories that were like pretty scary, honestly. I had a friend that told me a story. Him and two other friends went to a cabin and they opened the door to the cabin. None of the lights worked. The power was out, but it was freezing cold, even though it was summer inside the cabin. They didn't know what to do, so they were going to leave, and there was a dark figure that appeared and started coming out of this cabin, or came out. You know, they were back at the car, I think. They would come back down out of the doorway, down the front porch, come to the car, and they had seen some dark figure coming towards them. It came right up to them, and that was about the time they decided they were going to get the hell out of there. And so they ran, and they said they saw some other strange glowing lights in the forest. Yeah, this could have been a whole fucking story right here. But I like to believe my friend that some crazy shit happened. I've never had anything super crazy happen to me. My mom has a little bit. But I have an idea that, I don't know, everything moves. Everything is moving. Even if you're dead, everything's moving. All the atoms that make up what you are moving. And it will eventually become something else. I think truly the idea of fear is a human concept. It exists in nature. Reactions mm-hmm. are what exists in nature. But I think good and evil, it's weird to consider that that's not a real thing. Good and evil isn't real. It doesn't exist outside of humankind. Mm. No animals have good and evil necessarily. Mm-hmm. Necessarily.
Right, right.
Certainly some animals have positive, negative. Certainly more, some animals have comfort and discomfort. This is all my stupid bullshit ideas, by the way, so please don't take any of this serious. But In my opinion, I think things are simpler than what everybody sees and feels. Everything's moving in a direction. Everything will move in a direction. All of the actions, reactions will occur in a certain direction. Not to say it's time to give up and just sit and wait. There is certainly an amount that we can affect.
Mm-hmm.
I think humans can affect great change. I think great positive change can come. So really sitting here and thinking about the stories I've told, are they true? Maybe. There's certainly some people that think they are. There could be value there. Could be at least something to learn.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the point of everything. I'm getting a little rambly and maybe I need to drink that last beer. What was the question?
I think you nailed it. I think you nailed
it.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing those awesome stories with us.
Of course.
All right, so where would you like the peoples to find you on the social meds? Do you got the Instagramigrams? Do you got the TikToks?
If you go to www.internet.com.
World Wide Web. Dot.
I don't know. I don't have
GeoCities.
I don't have a huge social media thing currently. I would say on Instagram, sounds you can see.
All right.
Is my Instagram currently. What I'm doing right now is I'm not in a rush to have some presence. If I can get to that point, I'd love to have it. But I don't necessarily want a social media presence. I like to have an Instagram where I can take a picture of a place. And while I'm there, I'm recording ambience. Mm. So I like the idea of capturing sound, taking a picture that encapsulates what that sound was and uploading it. And then eventually slowly I'm going to try and develop better ways of having a presence. But currently, I'm not really super heavy on Instagram, I guess, hell, any social media presence.
That's probably a good thing for the most part.
It's not bad. It's not too bad. I like making sounds. I like making music. I do that regardless of whether people want it or not. And so I've been very fortunate that some people do want it. And so I think, come check me out Instagram. What is it? At Sounds You Can See.
That's what you told us a minute ago. So I don't know.
What else? Right? If you go to SoundCloud. VincentParish.com. Go there. Listen to, I'm sorry, that's actually my portfolio. That's not my SoundCloud. You go to VincentParish.com. Check out what you're going to see. You're going to see some sweet fucking art. You're going to scroll down a little bit. You're going to find some music. You're going to find sound effects. You're going to get everything you fucking need. I guarantee it. So that's my sales pitch.
Awesome. That was perfect.
Jesus.
Got us hyped. I think we're good to go.
I think probably, yeah. Not too much more. Were there any questions from the audience?
Write in questions.
They write them in.
Hey, right. I'm thinking of doing a little bit of changes here and there, so maybe that'll be part of. But, you know, do let us know where you listen, how you listen. Share us with your friends.
Yeah, please.
Share it with at least one friend this episode.
And reach out to me anytime if you have questions about the stories I told, anything. VinceAP@gmail.com.
Oh, damn. He dropped the email.
If your ass needs music or sound effects or both, that's all I'm providing. Give me a shout.
Absolutely. I can endorse that.
I'm more than happy. Right. If Sydney needs a break, let me know.
Oh.
Because I can put fart noises. I can put other noises. I can put a third tier of noises. I can also do the extreme, you know, difficulty that Sydney does, which is the extra awesome noises.
Mm.
I'm a little drunk. I don't know if any of that worked.
I don't know. I might have to cut that so she doesn't like seek you out and murder you.
Basically,
for trying to like swoop in on her job there.
She's better than me was what I was trying to say.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. Cool. She'll accept that.
Okay, good. I want her to know that.
If I need like a second string is what you're saying. Right. She works in football, so she'll understand what that analogy
means.
That's
right. The NFL, right?
She does, yeah.
I have to know more.
NFL.
So she adds the sound or...
That is all her SFX, yes.
She
it's exactly what she does.
That's really fucking cool.
Many people don't know this. Like, football is a very silent sport. That is all added in. Even if you go to a live game, it's all Foley'd. You wouldn't know.
Is it really Foley? Most of it?
It's all Foley.
Even the live shit?
Yeah. Even if you are like in the stadium, that's all Foley work. Like, those people are professionals.
Are they recording it as it happens and then uploading it?
No, it's like live. It is like going to a live ass.
Like that kind of thing. I feel like the camera thing has a microphone. I don't know.
No, it's all Foley artists.
I need to talk to Sydney.
Football is silent. Little known fact. The NFL might hunt me down for revealing that.
They probably have.
You heard it here, folks.
So many fucking sound effects already that they just reuse a lot of them and they manipulate them.
I'm sure.
So it's distinct. Okay, I'm taking what you've said as fact.
As fact.
So
as you always should. Just kidding. Take nothing I say as fact on this podcast.
Sydney, you're amazing and I want to hear more of your work.
Well, that sounds like a great place to end this episode then. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vincent.
For having me on, of course.
Thank you for listening to Boozed. Our theme was composed by Vincent Parrish. Sound production is done by Sydney Johnson. You can find us on social media at Boozed Pod. That's B-O-O-S-E-D Pod. If you would like to support the show, please go to patreon.com/boostpod to make a contribution. Thank you for listening. And don't forget, get boosted.